Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Hey, everybody. From KQED Public Radio, it's Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Guy Marzorati, in for Marisa Lagos. And on today's show, Sabrina Cervantes was the youngest member of the State Assembly when she was elected at age 29 to represent the Inland Empire.
Cervantes chairs the Latino Legislative Caucus, and she's also raising triplets with her wife back home. We've got a lot to talk with her about, including how she knocked off a Republican incumbent in a GOP-leaning district and held on to the seat. But first, Guy, and we do want to talk with the Assemblywoman about this as well, but Governor Newsom this week took something of a victory lap, signing a bill that had been much anticipated. It started off as a tax, got kind of reduced down to a penalty, and now it's going to be giving more transparency and more empower to the regulators to help bring a little bit of light, perhaps, to how gas prices are set in the state.
Yeah, I mean, I think at a certain point, a victory lap had to be taken, right? This was a special session that Newsom previewed as part of his reelection campaign. And I think, look, and conversations we've had with legislators kind of behind the scenes, a big driving force of this by the end was you got to get something done, right? And I'll be interested to hear the assembly members' thoughts on this, but it's like you swim out to the middle of the lake in this special session, you got to find some way to the end. And in the end, I think the legislature got a really good deal out of this, right? This is something that is going to be put to the Energy Commission. They're going to be the ones to set the potential profit ceiling. They're going to be the ones to determine penalties. You have the state auditor who's going to come back and figure out, is this program working or not? The legislature gets to sit back, and if there is money coming in from the windfall, they get to disperse it.
Yeah, exactly. And Newsom was pretty clear that this is not something that's going to affect gas prices today, tomorrow, or even this year necessarily. But the other thing is, you know, they don't have to worry about being accused of raising taxes. You know, just leave that to the regulators.
Right.
The Republican Party, of course, and some members are trying to spin it that this is going to lead to higher prices at the pump. I think that's a bit of a stretch. But your reference to special session, there have been other special sessions where there's been that swim out to the middle of the lake and then came back to the lake with no fish, no nothing.
Right.
So this is actually, I think this is maybe the way the process is supposed to work. Obviously, the tax idea was not well received. It was floated before the election last year, and, you know, gas prices were above $6 a gallon. And I think this is something the legislature, like you said, feels more comfortable with, and in the end may actually make a bigger difference.
Yeah, and I don't really understand the process arguments here, right? This is not something that was put together in 1 week. This was something that had been discussed for months. There was a long informational hearings in the utilities committee, just hearing from experts, many of whom came back and said, look, the way that Newsom originally approached this might not be the best way to do it. And then you saw revisions from then. I do think you find the oil industry in California at a really interesting space coming out of this. We know they punch above their weight in a very blue state. You can look at the amount of lobbying money that was spent last session. No one spent more. You can look at the record of their super PACs in the midterm elections. They did pretty well. And even a bill like this where, yes, it did ultimately get changed a lot towards the finish line. But on the same token, things have changed from past decades, even from past years, from 2015 when they handed Jerry Brown a huge defeat when he was trying to limit, cut petroleum use in the state. And I think you look at the record Newsom put together towards the end of last session, the environmental bills he passed, the fact that only one Democrat voted no on this bill in the assembly, given all the moderate members there.
Yeah, and including, Democrats that the oil industry had given money to,
right,
to help them get elected. You know, some of those either voted for it or just, didn't vote against it. One thing, and you and I were, slacking about this yesterday, over Slack, is that the governor could not help himself. You know, he had this press conference in the rotunda to sign the bill, and he made reference to a certain governor in a certain state, obviously referring to Ron DeSantis, who, basically, as he put it, brought Mickey Mouse to his knees when he took on Disney over LGBT rights in that state and said, we brought big oil to its knees. Maybe a little bit of hyperbole.
And also just so unrelated. I mean, this literally had nothing to do with anything DeSantis had been pursuing. Yes, WISPA had run some ads in Florida against, you know, Newsom, but it just seemed like going out of his way to make that connection to DeSantis.
You know, it did make me kind of think, like, wouldn't it be nice to have a woman governor one of these days? Just because there's like this trash talking that he does, not just with DeSantis and, you know, with Abbott in Texas. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a different style. I mean, it works for him, I guess. But it's not the kind of thing you see women governors or senators doing very much. It just made me think about that.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, before we talk to our guest, before we take a break, I do want to briefly touch on this vote that happened this week in Shasta County. The Board of Supervisors there are voting to move ahead with a plan to hand count ballots. It would be the only county in California to do that. Why does this matter? I think this is the manifestation of election conspiracies coming home in California.
Absolutely. I mean, sort of what they did was sever ties with Dominion, which is, used in 40 of the 58 counties here in California. They make voting machines, which have been the target of conspiracy theories and the big lie. In fact, they're suing Fox News for defamation, I think it's a $1.6 billion lawsuit. And so, yeah, Shasta County becomes the very first county in the country to get rid of the Dominion machines. The question is, what are they going to replace them with? And so, as you said, they want to go to a total hand count, which requires a lot of work. And, you know, you talk about transparency and having faith in the integrity of the election. There's a lot of questions about that. How do you tabulate them? How do you even print the ballots if you don't have machines? And how do you count them in a way that people are going to believe? Can you use an Excel spreadsheet? You know, and then disabled voters also need some kind of equipment. They can't fill, you know, if they're blind or whatever. So there's a lot of questions. There could well be lawsuits aimed at Shasta County over this decision. But, you know, it is something clearly that conservatives are cheering in a county that is a very conservative county, went by 65% to Trump last time.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see the Secretary of State, Shirley Weber's, any response she has to this, and then litigation. I mean, yeah, you said it.
Let the lawsuits fly. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we return, we're going to be joined by Riverside Assemblywoman Sabrina Cervantes. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week with Guy Marzorati, and we are super excited to have with us today a state lawmaker from the Inland Empire, one of the most purple and competitive parts of California. And at age 29, Sabrina Cervantes defeated a Republican incumbent there to win an assembly seat in Riverside County. She chairs the Latino Legislative Caucus, and now she's running for a promotion of sorts to the state Senate. Sabrina Cervantes, welcome to Political Breakdown. Good to have you.
Pleasure to be with you all.
Well, of course, we love on this show to talk about guest biographies. But before we do that, we do want to get your take on the special session and the bill that we talked about at the top of the show. You're kind of a centrist Democrat, as Democrats go in Sacramento. How did you get to yes on this bill? How hard was it for you to support it?
Well, at the end of the day, we were concerned about how much people were paying at the pump. We've been dealing with this, and constituents have been asking questions for over a year. And so there were a lot of questions when we knew that the price of crude oil barrels were down. And so we had to really take a look at what we can do as a legislature, working with the administration, the governor, on ways to address this. And so we stood united to protect consumers from price gouging at the pump. This week, we took a bold step, strong action to protect Californians from price gouging. But we we did a lot of work in both houses to get to this point. And at the end of the day, it's making sure that no Californian is being taken advantage of.
What do you make of critiques? And we've heard this a lot from your Republican colleagues, that the legislature is basically handing over control over this issue of price gouging to the quote unquote bureaucracy. It's basically that the, you know, administration that's ultimately going to have to make these decisions.
So the Energy Commission will determine, the penalties. At the end of the day, we felt this was the strongest action we can take. There were a lot of different amendments and solutions being put forth by various groups and stakeholders. And we had a strong assembly working group working with the Senate counterparts and the administration to get to a place where we could get the majority of both houses to be on board. And so it took a lot to get to this point. Some say that it took us too long, right? And others say that we acted too quickly. So this is politics and policies that occur all the time in Sacramento. And as a representative, I'm doing the best that I can to protect consumers at the end of the day.
All right. Well, we want to talk about your bio. You have a very interesting life. You were born, I think, in 1987 in the eastern part of the Coachella Valley in Riverside County, which some may know, I guess, for the Coachella Music Festival. But what was it like for you growing up there?
Well, my family settled in the Coachella Valley in 1920 and purchased our family ranch that is still today our family ranch, the ranch that I grew up on. I'm a lifelong resident of Riverside County. And at an early age, I used to work side by side with my father and my grandfather replenishing the well, which is the second oldest well in the Coachella Valley. We would use that well water to get water into our homes, to irrigate the property. And even as a young girl, we used to pick oranges from our orange trees. I'm the eldest of four girls. And so we would climb the trees, pick the oranges that were ready and they were ripe, bag them, and then turn around and sell them in our front yard right there on the street. And so I still remember, you know, that citrus aroma coming from the beautiful trees, very strong scent, but that is some of my fondest memories growing up.
And you are not the first Cervantes to get into politics. Your dad, Greg, was the mayor of the city of Coachella. What was that like growing up? I mean, how did he get into politics, catch the political bug?
Well, my father was a public servant. I remember the age of 6 years old, being with my father, community events, doing the parades, knocking on doors, talking to constituents. He served as mayor of the city of Coachella in 1990 to 94. And so I was between the ages of 3 and 7 at the time. He actually gave the first key to the city to Cesar Chavez, which is an icon, a civil rights icon. You know, people think of Cesar Chavez as Delano and the important work that he did there. But when I think about Cesar Chavez, I think about Coachella. There is no stronger civil rights leader than Cesar Chavez in the city of Coachella, because he came out there during the Great Boycott Movement, where my family had direct experience. We actually had grapes on our family ranch at the time, where we stood alongside, my family stood alongside him, and they marched and they protested for better conditions for all farm workers. And so really that's what, from my father's experience in public service to my family serving in World War II, storming the beaches of Normandy, all those collective experiences really propelled me to look at public service at an early age. And that really my upbringing has a lot to do with it and why I decided to run for office.
Yeah, well, no, it's not just you, too.
In 2016.
Yeah, your sister also is on the Riverside City Council. And I'm curious, like, what were dinner conversations like at home with your parents? I mean, did you talk about politics? I mean, how did you catch the bug?
So my mother immigrated here from Mexico at the age of 9. And so having our experiences, our family experiences, and having these discussions at the dinner table were so important. It was actually a part of our upbringing. Like I said, I'm the eldest of four girls, and my sister is the current mayor pro tem in the city of Riverside. So yes, she also pursued a path in public service. And it's beautiful to be able to be of service to our communities in this way. My parents would always bring up the importance of fighting and raising the voices of our communities that are the most marginalized, making sure that we weren't leaving anyone out of the conversation, that when people were afraid to speak up, that it was our duty to do what was right and stand up for them. But that having an education was the foundation of that, that we needed to have an education to pursue our degrees and then come back and serve our communities.
So given all that, were you just unbeatable in student government?
You know, at an early age, I never saw myself in government and running for office. So I always was that quiet child who just focused on my athletics and focused on my academics and just wanted to stay the course, didn't want to be in the limelight. In fact, I was quite happy being the legislative aide to members and just doing the work behind the scenes, and never saw myself really stepping up and running for office until it got to the point where I knew it was just that feeling that propelled me in 2015 when I decided to make the jump from staffer to candidate.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with Guy Marzorati, and we're talking with Sabrina Cervantes. She represents a chunk of Riverside County and a little bit of San Bernardino in the State Assembly. She also chairs the Latino Legislative Caucus up there in Sacramento. And Assemblywoman, you're one of about a dozen members of the LGBT caucus in Sacramento, and I'm wondering, what was coming out like for you? Did that happen in college? Did it happen in high school? How did it come about? It's different for everybody.
So we do have the largest LGBTQ caucus in the nation with 13 members, historic 13 members this year. But I actually didn't come out until my late 20s. I started kind of that transition in my early 20s with my sister, Clarissa, who is also openly LGBTQ. She was my first confidant and someone that I felt that I could be my authentic self around. And it was challenging being growing up Catholic, a Latino household. It's definitely a shift. And it took some time for our families to be accepting of this. But this, again, this is a much different time than we are today, where you see the acceptance, although we still have a lot of barriers in our LGBTQ plus community, especially with our trans siblings who face so many more barriers, and that we have to acknowledge and we fight for on behalf of our communities every day here in Sacramento. But really, you know, I ran in a district that predominantly at the time was a very purple district, where I was counted out by Democrats and Republicans because I didn't reflect the district. That I was, there's no way that a queer Latina could get elected to the state legislature. And we did the work organizing on the ground, took a look at a lot of the hard issues, and really were able to win over the voters by showing up authentically. And that was a beautiful part, that I didn't have to pretend to be anyone else. I showed up, with who I was in every room, in every space, and quickly realized as well that these spaces weren't meant for people who look like me. And that is still the same today. Now that I am in an office, we are still pushing the needle and making sure that we're leading with diversity, equity, and inclusion in mind.
So you won that race in 2016, and it was notable because you became the 54th vote, Democratic vote, in the state assembly, giving the party a supermajority, the ability to pass taxes. I mean, how did that affect how you approach the job? As you said, someone coming from a more moderate swing district when you arrived in Sacramento.
Well, just like in 2016, where I was counted out, I was also counted out in 2018. I went in and negotiated with Governor Brown on that one particular issue, and I was able to bring home significant amount of resources that benefited my communities, and where we wouldn't have seen these resources in more than 30 years if it wasn't for my negotiation skills with the governor. The Inland Empire has historically been left out of the equation, has been left out of the conversations of the halls of power here in Sacramento. And that's where I first ran for office in 16, was to advocate for our fair share of resources from Sacramento, because we are the fastest growing region in the nation, and we deserve our seat at the table.
I'm sorry to jump in. I just want to ask you about that meeting that you had with the governor, because I think you were called to the governor's mansion. It was to, he needed your vote to increase the gas tax. And of course, you were going to have a target on your back probably anyway, because you had defeated a Republican and, you were in your first reelection campaign coming up. Tell us about that meeting at the governor's mansion. Here you are, a freshman legislator with Jerry Brown, the old pro. How did it go? How'd you walk out of there with 400 million plus?
With 427 million, yes, and direct resources for critical infrastructure projects. I will say, yes, I was only in my first few months in the state legislature as a new assembly member. But the good thing is I knew that I was rooted in my community, which inspired me to run for office in the first place. I knew what impacted the lives of everyday working people in my district. And I also had, I brought my experiences with me growing up in the Inland Empire. And so being there with the governor, negotiating what this meant, I was able to bring all that and really show him that if this is where we're heading, this is what we need to do. Because at the end of the day, it's doing the best that you can, advocating for your constituents, the ones that brought you to Sacramento, that entrusted you to make these decisions. And so I don't take this lightly. I knew that this was going to be a challenge and that we were going to get attacked in the next election cycle. But at the end of the day, it's communicating why we decide to make the votes that we do. And instead of being defensive, we were able to go back to the district and show, this is what we're getting. This is what we wouldn't have ever received if I was not in this position at this right time. And the people spoke and reelected me in 2018. And now I'm on my fourth term being the assembly member for the sixth year in counting for this particular district. And I'm proud of that.
And I think winning in that district, it's made a lot of California political watchers say, Sabrina Cervantes, watch out for her. She could be someone rising up to higher office. I'm sure you don't pay attention to any of that. But, I do think if you look at who our constitutional officers are, who are the highest, elected officials in the state, there's very few people from swing districts. And I think that's probably because you have to take votes that, are tough, where your constituents might not agree with the party line. I'm wondering if you think some of the votes you have taken, or you worry some of the votes you have taken, might come back to haunt you in that way, instances where you've broken with the party.
We have worked very hard to communicate to our constituencies, to our voters every election cycle on the issues that they care about. And so I stand behind every vote that I've taken. We are very thorough in our research in every bill, especially at the end of House of Origin and at the end of session. At the end of the day, I do not shy away from these tough questions and these tough issues. I'm doing the best to deliver in every sense of the word, to deliver for our constituencies. And I will say, with this last redistricting, the district has gone much bluer.
Right.
And this is just showing the rapidly changing demographics. It's reflective of our evolving communities in the IE. And I think that it's important that we have individuals, being the first Latina millennial, first openly LGBTQ woman, and first IE representative elected to chair the Latino caucus is important, is meaningful. My colleagues entrusted me in this pivotal year of the 50th anniversary of the Latino Caucus to lead us into the future.
Well, let me ask you about that. As you said, you chair the caucus, the Latino caucus. I think there's like 35 members now, which is quite extraordinary. This week, you released a list of priority bills. And in the past several sessions, there's been a lot of expansion of health care to undocumented Californians, the expansion of testing and leave policy during COVID. So what's really at the very top of the priority list, not just for this year, but for, the next year or two?
Historically, we have continued to fight for justice and representation in the last 50 years since its founding, since the Latino Caucus's founding. We continue to fight for equity in health, healthcare access. We have important bills like AB4 that we're going to continue to fight for as a priority for our undocumented community to receive healthcare coverage under Covered California. We're going to fight for our educational equity when it comes to looking at ethnic studies, our framework across the state of California, working with the Teacher Credentialing Commission, as well as looking at how we put more dream centers in high schools across the state of California, empowering our undocumented youth to pursue opportunities in higher education. All this work, we are uplifting and empowering our nearly 16 million Latinos in the state of California. And in fact, something I'd like to share is we have Cesar Chavez holiday coming up. And it's only a state holiday because that is something the Latino Caucus pushed for years ago. And so we were proud of our 14 pieces of legislation that are now our priority for the Latino Caucus, and proud to unveil and launch our Latino Caucus 50th campaign.
And there's a lot of diversity within the Latino Caucus. You have Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, folks from Northern California, Southern California, but not a lot of partisan diversity. That's all Democrats. And some Republicans, Latino Republicans in the legislature, say they're not invited. They're not allowed to join. What's up with that?
So we have historically have our bylaws, and we certainly are open to working with any member of the legislature who wants to help us on issues important to the Latino community. And so our bylaws do state, being Latino and being Democrat, to be a part of the eligibility requirements for our caucus that has been in place since the caucus's founding 50 years ago. And that is what we are going to continue to adhere to.
Well, we know that you are raising, you and your wife, three potential voters. What is that like, suddenly having triplets and being in the legislature? I think your wife is a hospital technician, so that probably helps a bit.
Yes, yes. So we are proud parents to three-year-old triplets, which they are our life's greatest teachers, let me tell you. They have wonderfully blessed both of our lives. It's not easy to the journey of parenthood for LGBTQ plus families. And so that is something, my wife and I recognize, and we are honored to be able to share our stories and navigating parenthood in both of our roles. But she is now a stay-at-home mother, given the childcare dynamics that we faced, not just in the state of California, but nationally. And unfortunately, women bear the brunt of that. Thankfully, I owe it to my wife that I'm able to continue my work in public service and continuing in my passion to serve while she stays at home with them full-time until we can get them to transitional kindergarten.
All right. Assemblywoman Sabrina Cervantes from the Inland Empire, the IE, as
she
calls it.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
That'll do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. It's a production of KQED Public Radio.
I'm Guy Marzorati. Our engineer today is Christopher Beal.
I'm Scott Schaefer. For more politics coverage from KQED, subscribe to the Political Breakdown newsletter. You'll find it at kqed.org/newsletters. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, everybody.